fifth case, O'Rourke v. Palisades. Mr. Lebturner.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. This Court held in Muha v. Encore that the purpose of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is to prevent abusive debt collection practices. In Blatt v. Beeler, this Court paraphrased Section 1692E to be a rule against trickery. Here, Palisades created and attached a fake document to a state court collection complaint. The document is designed to appear to be an account statement issued in the ordinary course of business from a credit issuer. The document is addressed to Mr. O'Rourke, and it is dated 5 months prior to filing the complaint. Thus, it appears to have been previously sent to the debtor. But Palisades admits that it had never been sent to Mr. O'Rourke by either Palisades or the collection attorney. The district court recognized that the document was fraudulent because it contained items or fields in it which are obvious falsehoods, as described by the district court, such as credit limit and credit available. And that is because these items would only be used by an original creditor that is issuing credit and not by a debt buyer like Palisades, which does not issue credit. Creating and filing a fake document is an abusive practice and trickery. As instructed by this court in Muha, we should look to the function of the statement by considering Palisades' explanation for why they drafted it the way they did and attached it to the complaint. By the way, this is an attachment that is not required by any rule of state law. Palisades has given an explanation, and it simply makes no sense. Palisades claims the purpose of the statement was to assist the court to identify the debtor and his address, the balance owed, and the creditor. The name of the debtor and the amount owed is in the complaint. The debtor's address is on the summons, a copy of which is in the court file. As for the name of the creditor, it is also on the complaint, which says it is Palisades 16. But there's a problem with that. The applicable bill of sale attached to the complaint says it is Palisades 15, and the statement adds a third creditor, Palisades Collection. Absolutely nothing in the statement helps the court. Although the district court found that the statement contained numerous falsehoods, it granted summary judgment to Palisades because plaintiff did not submit a survey showing that the statement was confusing to the average unsophisticated consumer. This is not a case requiring a consumer survey for several reasons. First, how is attaching a fake document to a lawsuit ever not fraudulent and abusive? Once it is known that the statement was never sent to the debtor, it is an obvious and deliberate fake. If this court looks at the fake at the document and thinks it looks like an account statement sent prior to suit, then plaintiffs should receive summary judgment. Surveys are not necessary for this type of abusive practice. As this court said in Ruthin v. Triumph, this is a question of objective fact and should be resolved as a matter of law on the undisputed facts.
Is this deception targeted at the court?
Pardon?
Is this targeted at the court?
To the collection court judge, yes.
So is that what the, I guess you're alleging the law does address this in some way, I'm not sure what, but abuse of the, I don't know, abuse of process or fraud on the court or something like that.
Well, it's certainly a fraud on the court. There's no question about that. We cited the Iuti case from the First Circuit, which says attaching a fake document, in that case it was a fake contract, to a complaint is an abusive practice. It's a fraud on the court, and it undermines the court's ability to proceed in a fair and objective manner. We think that applies here. And also, going to the fact that it was addressed to the court, this is the second reason why a survey is not needed. What is clear from Palisades' explanation is that the statement was directed to the court, not the debtor. Palisades would not have created the statement and attached it to the complaint unless it believed the statement would help it or given an advantage in court in collecting the debt. Thus, the communication is to affect the collection court judge. Indeed, Palisades admits as much. It was designed to assist the court. A fraudulent document is not a help to the court.
The amount due stated on that.
Pardon?
The amount due is not disputed. Is that correct, that the amount due is a correct amount?
That was never brought into issue because we never had the ability to contest either the statement or the amount owed, because as soon as we filed an appearance and filed in the collection court and appeared on behalf of Mr. O'Rourke, Palisades proceeded to immediately dismiss the case. And in the small claims court, you don't file answers or statements like that, so the case was gone before it could be brought up. I believe Mr. O'Rourke had a debt. He wasn't sure exactly of the amount, and he felt that it was beyond the statute of limitations.
What section then under the the consumer credit law are you referring to that gives this action to protect the court or the judges or whatever? You refer to a lot of sections, and I'm not sure which one actually applies.
Well,
I believe under 1692, I assume.
I believe 1692E makes it a violation to. I'm not sure I have the.
One is probably 1692E10.
There is one statement in there that says that effectively a false communication to any person violates the act.
Well, it says here the use of any false representation or deceptive means to collect or attempt to collect any debt or to obtain information concerning a consumer. Is that what you're referring to, or is there something?
No, there's one in there that refers to any person. It might be in 1692A,
Is it in your brief? Does it refer to it in your brief?
We referred to it in the brief, and in fact, in the Every versus RJM case, the intended recipient of the communication there was the debtor's attorney. And the court held that, one, a communication to the attorney would violate the act, and that the standard for determining whether there is a violation when the communication is to someone other than a debtor, such as an attorney, it is different than a communication to the debtor. And, of course, a judge would be more equivalent to the attorney than to the debtor. Finally, even if confusion is considered, a fake document containing obvious falsehoods is confusing on its face. This court has repeatedly held, this is in Williams, Kinney, Chuway, and Ruth, that a consumer survey is not necessary if the communication is deceptive on its face or the court can objectively determine that it is deceptive. The court objectively determined that it was never sent to a Mr. O'Rourke and it contained obvious falsehoods. In Randolph versus IMBS, this court held a debt collector's false statement is presumptively wrongful and that debt collectors may not make false statements, period. That's been done here. Summary judgment should have been given to the plaintiff.
Thank you, Mr. LeTourneur. Mr. Swofford.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I represent the Palisades companies, the defendants, and police in this case. There's really the summary. The court granted, the district court granted summary judgment in this case because there's basically no evidence to support anything Mr. LeTourneur said. There's no evidence to support the inference that this so-called statement of account, which is sort of an odd document. I don't deny that it could be misleading. But there was no evidence to support the inference that it was misleading. Mr. O'Rourke himself, when he got this statement, and this statement, well, while it's strange, on its face, says that it is attempting to collect a debt that has been assigned. So it's not a typical type of statement. Mr. O'Rourke looked at the statement, and he could see what it was for. It was for, and this is page 825 of the appendix if you want to look at it. He could see that it was for a debt not to Palisades Collection, which is on the title of the statement. It was for a debt, as specified here in the middle, for a debt that he originally owed to Citibank. So, you know, it didn't fool him. So I question how it can fool anyone else. But
having said that, though, maybe he's shrewder than the a reasonable person or an average person. Maybe he's got a little more insight than the average.
Maybe Mr. O'Rourke was the sophisticated person, and the unsophisticated person could have been misled. But here is where the district court, you know, found that in order to proceed with the case or in order to defeat summary judgment, there had to be a survey of unsophisticated consumers, and there wasn't any such survey that any unsophisticated consumer could have been misled by this. And, you know, I'm not going to deny it couldn't have misled somebody, but there's no survey, Your Honor, which is required.
What was the purpose of that document?
Well, the employees of Palisades said it was to aid the court and the by setting forth the amount and the information that it has on here. And the collection attorney said it was to assist the debtor, which it surely did in this case because Mr. O'Rourke understood it. I don't think this is the best way to collect debts, but still in all, it didn't mislead anybody here. And that's what's required to
the allegation. I mean, as they're pointing out, they're targeting the judge.
Okay, and I'd be happy to say and
well,
talk about that too,
because that seems to be who's being who should be protected.
Well, you know, what was filed in the collection court in this case was a complaint that sought to collect an assigned debt. It didn't allege that it was proceeding on an account stated theory. Attached to the complaint was the assignment, the bill of sale. Attached to the complaint was an affidavit verifying the assignment. And then also attached to the complaint was this statement of accounts, the so-called statement of account. But even it says that it is attempting to collect an assigned debt originally from Citibank. And, you know, this court in Beeler said that state court, and I wish I probably overstated Beeler a little bit in my brief, but the court did say in Beeler that state court judges are fully capable of determining whether a debt is owed. And if you look at all those documents that I said, the complaint, which isn't attempting to collect on an account stated theory, the assignment documents, and the statement itself, which reveals that it was an assigned debt. No state court judge is going to conclude that Palisades was attempting to collect on an account stated theory. I mean, it's just not reasonable. And even the plaintiff's expert, and the district court struck the expert's testimony because they weren't based on acceptable data or, you know, theory as is required when doing surveys. But even if we give the plaintiff's expert credence, you know, she testified, Ms. Highland, that a collection court judge primarily looks to the complaint that's filed. And the complaint that's filed in this case, in the collection case, sought to recover on an assigned debt. And so, I can't believe under Beeler and under this opinion that any state court judge would have been misled, and there's no evidence that any state court judge would have been misled by what was actually filed. The complaint, the affidavit of the assignment, the bill of sale, and this statement, which reflects the assignments. And as far as attorneys being misled by this, this is not a situation where there's any false amount stated in the collection complaint.
What about the judge? I'm confused because we're coming here under something under 1692, aren't we?
1692, right? It was A two and 10.
What applies to protecting judges?
I'm sorry.
This is a consumer protection, and somehow this is construed to be protecting judges from being lied to, I guess, or deceived, or fraud upon. I know there are actions for fraud upon a court, which are separate from this, and I'm asking you to at least say it either doesn't apply or instead what does apply, and it doesn't meet the test here.
Well,
or is there
that's a difficult question, because in Avery it said, you know, it did say if it was an out-and-out false statement in a pleading, in a court pleading, not here, but in the collection action, it could, you know, it could mislead an attorney, for instance, it could apply. But the 692 could apply. But in the absence of an absolute fraud on the court, I don't see why it would apply, because, as Beeler says, state court judges have to be presumed to be competent, and there's no survey evidence in this case that, you know, that the judge was fooled. And I'm sorry I can't answer your question any better as to under what sections of 692.
Well, that's why we're here. That's all I'm asking for that. This has been brought as some other case of fraud against the court or something. I don't know where it comes under this statute.
Well, I mean, as I understand the plaintiff's allegations, and if you look at the complaint, the theory is that if you mislead the state court, it injures him. And since he didn't produce the evidence that the state court could have been misled, I mean, that's the basis on which the case was litigated. He didn't produce any evidence that the state court could have been misled, and I don't see how it could have been misled based on these documents. Wasn't injured.
Suppose the case went forward. Instead of doing a non-suit, he said, okay, let's go to court. Now, there's a lawyer in there, there's a consumer who's mentioned, you've got a judge up there. And so at this point, I assume they would allege that the consumer, meaning the person who owes the money, is somehow misled. Here, we're talking about the judge. We didn't get that far, at least to the consumer.
Of course, in this case, the consumer wasn't misled. I'm sorry. It's just kind of a difficult question for me.
Tell me whatever your argument is.
Because there was ultimately no evidence that the judge was misled or could have been misled. And, you know, the district court did dismiss this on the basis that there was no evidence that the consumer was misled. And we really didn't brief this. I'm sorry, Your Honor, what you're asking.
What was that?
We really didn't brief the precise question, I don't think, that you're answering, because the case wasn't litigated on that basis.
Whatever you brief.
And, I mean, 1692 wasn't enacted to protect the state court judges. I understand that. It was enacted to protect people like Mr. O'Rourke. And the plaintiff's theory is if you fool a state court judge, you injure Mr. O'Rourke. And he couldn't prove that. And it would be a narrow case when he could. I see my red line is on.
Thank you, Mr.
Recommend the rest of my brief to you, and I thank you for your patience.
Well, Attorney, your time has expired. You may have a minute. And following up on Judge Mayne's question, what, if anything, in 1692 speaks to the Act speaks to protecting the court? What can be read fairly to in these provisions to apply or indicate in any way that it refers to the?
What speaks to it is that it's either in 1692A or perhaps 1692E10, where it refers to action taken with regard to any person.
So you want us to read person to include the court?
Pardon?
You want us to read person to include the court?
Any person would include the court, yes. What the false statement does is create the basis for proving damages by an account stated. An account stated under Illinois law is established when one party renders a statement of account and the other party acquiesces thereto, either expressly or by retaining the statement of account without objection. And this is a statement of account between people who have had business dealings with each other, such as the original creditor did. Then, if judgment is found, by the way, the collection action is a breach of contract action. The statement of account goes to the proof of the damages, which then can be used to prove damages without bringing in any witness. So if they didn't use this, and what honest debt buyers do is they get the original creditor's statement, which is a legitimate one, or an affidavit from the original creditor. And he said it wasn't a fraud on the court. It's an absolute fraud on the court to give a statement to Quake.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Turner. Thank you, Mr. Swofford. The case is taken under advisement.